microwaved coffee.
So I've been watching Scrubs because I couldn't get Scrubs in Mexico.
Oh, what's it on?
It's on Amazon Prime. Or at least the first season. I haven't checked what other seasons are available because sometimes Amazon likes to give you like half a season.
Yeah.
And then like the other half of the seasons, they make you pay or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy to get what I can get because I've been wanting to watch. That's like one of my favorite shows.
I have never seen that show and I've heard it's so funny.
Oh my God. It is so funny.
Yeah.
I think it's the best written show. At least the first few seasons. The last season kind of sucked. Mm-hmm. But the first few seasons, like, it's just... And then they throw back, kind of like How I Met Your Mother, where they throw back to other things.
Uh-huh.
But just, like, the main characters, like, he talks to himself so you can hear his thoughts. And sometimes you can visually see what he's imagining. And it's just, it's so funny. Like, one of the first few episodes, like, he gets so mad, his head explodes. Mm-hmm. And the guy he's talking to is like, if you wouldn't have gotten so mad, your head wouldn't have exploded. it does that thing where it kind of breaks like reality. And
Yeah.
So I love it. It's such a good show.
I need to watch that. And I need to watch The Sopranos. I've never seen The Sopranos either. And people are like, that's one of the biggest reactions I get from people when I say I've never seen that show. Because they're like, what? But hey, I finally watched The Wire, so maybe I'll finally watch those two shows.
Sopranos too. I watched the first like 2-3 episodes and then I was like, oh, this is an investment. And I was like, I'm not going to do this.
Not now, at least.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'll do it after my Oscar run. We've been watching, I've been watching Friends now as my bedtime show, but I hate it because I always try to do IT Crowd and like as my sleep show, but I can't because then Netflix does the whole are you still watching bullshit. I start laughing. Yeah, that too. It does the are you still watching, and then it wakes me up several times during the night because I don't hear it. Actually wake me up and I have to press a button and like I'm still watching, and I hate that. So
I wish they had an option, at least an option to like turn it off.
Yeah, that's so dumb. Like, why?
I literally don't know anyone who likes it.
No, who would like it? Like, stop judging me. Yes, I want to watch TV for 8 hours. Leave me alone. We are in a pandemic. Let me do this.
The only time I could see it beneficial is when you're like binge watching it and it's late at night. You're like, I should go to bed. Oh, one more. And then it pops up and then you like
cuts you off.
Okay, I'll go to bed.
And like I hate the face of the guy on TikTok that goes like, you should take a break, and I'm always like, you should shut up.
Oh, wait, you've gotten him several times?
Yeah.
Oh my god. I've only seen it once. It was like a video. I thought somebody just made it. But no, it was like 1 a.m. and I come across it and this guy is like, hey, you've been on this for too long. Go to sleep. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, the one that I got said like, yeah, you've been on this for a while. You should get up and get something to eat or something like that. It said, it's always that one for me. It's like a black guy.
Oh my God, that is so funny.
And I was like, you need to like mind your own business. Right?
You need to leave me alone, guy.
I have insomnia right now. I cannot sleep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's funny. I didn't know that was a thing.
That's usually when I've seen it, like when I can't sleep and I've been on it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always like, yeah, you need to stop showing me this because it's getting annoying.
Yeah. Anywho, this is Microwave Coffee Podcast, and I'm Kishan Zendi.
I'm Ivan Ortega.
And I'm Justin Park.
So it's really funny that we were talking about streaming. So during my media class the other day, we were talking about books. And how everything starting from like the printing press to digital libraries now, and how, you know, everything's going digital. It made me think of, we were talking about like kind of how libraries are disappearing. You know, that's like a rare, or for you to even have a library card is very rare, you know? So that got me thinking about video rental stores. So let's talk about video rentals.
Video rentals.
Video rental stores began in the late 70s after the creation of the VCR, which was first released in 1975. Even though VCRs were invented in the late 70s, it was not easy to get your hands on a movie because the cost of a VHS before they became a common household item was $100 per movie.
Holy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of money. Especially, you know, especially back then, it's even higher to us now. But the studios actually thought they were doing us a favor by selling us the movies for $100 for a reason that might seem familiar to you today. That is because they thought, well, if you have the movie at home and a bunch of people go over to your house and watch the movie, that's the cost. It's way cheaper than going to the movie theater for a group of people, like for paying for a ticket, you know. Tickets were maybe like $5 or something. And so if you had a, you know, a group of people over, that would already pay for itself. Today, especially because of the pandemic, like we were talking about earlier, you can rent a film that's in theaters for $20. And that's cheaper than two movie tickets nowadays, sadly. So a very smart individual, unfortunately, I don't know who, thought, hey, I'll pay the $100 and then I'll rent out the video for a couple dollars and I'll make way more money. And so the video rental store was created and it kind of started popping up everywhere. But studios were not happy. They were like, well, wait, what the fuck? Because they never saw this coming. This is not something that they thought about. So studios started suing video rental stores. And the court cases actually went all the way to the Supreme Court. And lucky for us, the Supreme Court took the side of the video stores. They took their side under what was called the First Sale Doctrine. The First Sale Doctrine states that once a copyright holder has sold a copy of a work, he or she cannot control what the user does with it. So, for example, I can rent a book from the library or check out a book from the library, and you know, it's their property. If they bought the book, it's their property now. I just have to make sure to return it, but they can't control what the library can do with it. So after a few years, the studios were like, okay, my bad, we were wrong. When a man named David Cook opened a video store in 1985, he called his video store Blockbuster Video.
Blockbuster. Never heard of it.
What is that? Well, for you kids out there, you'll learn.
Some people have never heard.
You're joking, but some people probably have never heard of it.
Yeah, sadly. So the studios kind of backed up on their fight because they realized that this would become their main source of revenue. Blockbuster was successful for a few reasons. One is that it had tapes out on the shelves. So back when video rentals first started, they would keep the videos behind the counter for, you know, theft reasons, I guess. They also, another reason was that they had several copies of movies. So again, think back to a mom and pop store. If they had to pay $100 per movie, that's a lot of money. And so they wouldn't have several copies. They would only have like one of each movie. They could also, Blockbuster also got movies quickly. They got new movies quickly. So once they were released. Another reason it was successful is that it was family friendly. They carried R-rated movies, but they did not have an adult section like a lot of other places had. So in a lot of mom and pop's rental places, you could go behind a like saloon door or like beaded curtains. And then you could see the like porn section basically. Mm-hmm. And Blockbuster didn't have that. They were aiming for a more family friendly place. But the one thing that made Blockbuster successful was their software. So mom and pop shops were checking customers out with pen and paper.
Yep.
And Blockbuster, with their new software, had the ability to check customers out quickly. And they can also track thousands of rentals at a time. Just 1 year after opening, Blockbuster had opened over 20 stores. And this got the attention of a man named Wayne Wazanga. He was the CEO of Waste Management, which I'm sure you guys have seen, Waste Management. They are like, they run trash in this country, basically. He knew that this was a successful business plan, and so he purchased Blockbusters with the plan of expanding even more. The concern, of course, was that they would get rid of the little guy. So I gotta give credit, even though Blockbuster is a corporation, I do have to give them some credit, because this was actually their plan was actually good for the independent video stores. So they wouldn't just come in and open a store like other corporations and kind of like run them out of business. They would first go to the local video store and ask the video store if they would like to become a franchise. That's so nice. they had a corporate side and they had a franchise. They would say, so look, you are still the manager. You can keep your staff. No one's getting fired. You don't have to change anything. You just have to let us come in here and like change the colors. And that's it. And so, of course, the owners were like, yeah. Most of them were like, yeah, that sounds great. And I have the, and you know, they also have the security of having a big company behind them. So if anything does happen, they have other people that can like solve these other business issues for them. During the years after, I believe in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, it was said that a new Blockbuster opened every 17 hours.
Whoa, it's like Starbucks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane. I didn't know that there was that many. It's crazy. So every 17 hours, supposedly, there's a new one opening. Their profits were astounding because they began what's called rev share or revenue share with the studios. So what they would do is Blockbuster had a deal with all the major studios, and the studios would only charge Blockbuster like less than half for a movie. So it was no longer costing them $100. It was costing them like under $20 to buy a movie. And the deal was that if the studios let them have the movies for cheaper, that they would get part of their revenue.
Interesting. And
yeah, it was a really good deal for both sides. Blockbuster became huge, as we all know, and they became even bigger when Viacom purchased them in 1994 for $8.4 billion.
Dang.
Yeah, that's so much money.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Viacom bought them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like other huge companies, they, of course, look to expand the Blockbuster name. A year after Viacom acquired Blockbuster, they started what's called the Blockbuster Entertainment Awards, which is like a really cheesy, I don't know if you guys ever saw it. It was like a really cheesy award show. It was almost like the MTV Movie Awards.
Yeah.
Like it was like very campy version of like the Oscars. Oh, okay. It was the Oscars for the everyday man, basically. And Blockbuster went as far as planning an amusement park in Miami. And they had the plans drawn and everything.
What the hell?
Yeah, I don't know what that would be
everywhere.
Like Universal Studios.
Yeah, and I think it was like a plan to do like a Universal Studios too. But yeah, they were like trying to take over the world, basically. Yeah. Unfortunately, we never saw that theme park because there was trouble brewing. Yeah,
well, they made a huge mistake later.
Yeah. So yeah. I bet we all have the same answer to this, but why do you think Blockbuster went business?
Well, partially because of Netflix.
Netflix, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, everybody says Netflix. They're like, streaming ruined it.
But
believe it or not, it is not Netflix's fault.
It's Sephora.
Yeah,
yeah, it Sephora.
Well,
So, the first problem that they saw early on was a purchase of Paramount. So Viacom wanted to purchase Paramount, which they own now. In order to do that, they were using Blockbuster as a cash cow, which is like huge mistake. Never do that. They were getting loans for money that they didn't have yet. And so they were basically counting on Blockbuster to always be successful. And to help their business, they fired Wayne Wazanga, the Waste Management guy, and they hired a guy named John Antiaco of cheesy Gordita Crunch fame, because he's the one who came up with that. And so they thought, like, he came up with the taco, so let's make him in charge of the video store. He must be good. Yeah. So in 1999, Blockbuster went public, which is really strange to me because I thought that was late. I was like, I would have thought they would have done that way earlier if it started in like the 80s, but they went public. The day they went public, they got $465 million from public sales in stock.
Wow.
But unfortunately, that was not enough to support their massive debt. They had some really random investments. Like, they invested in Discovery Zone. You guys remember Discovery Zone?
Easy.
Yeah.
That was, like, my favorite place. Yeah. And they also invested in their parent company, Chuck E. Cheese. It's just, I don't understand business. It's like, I don't know how you go from a video store movies to that. But anyways. The real problem started in 2001 when a crap load of competition started coming out. This included TiVo, Netflix, Redbox, DVR, and on-demand movies. These like corporate assholes were making one bad decision after another. Mm-hmm. But that's not the most infuriating part. The most infuriating part is that Blockbuster had a chance to buy Netflix. Mm-hmm. And do you know what the price was? This is going to make you so mad.
$3 million.
The bargain price of $50 million.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is not a lot. That's not a lot of money for a huge company. Not only did they turn down Netflix.
Dang, opportunity missed.
They bullied Netflix like the fucking nerd at school. I mean, like, they laughed them out of the room. And with confidence. Or like, you're a shit company. You're never going to make it. And it doesn't stop there. So Netflix, even though they were like beaten down, kept coming back to Blockbuster and gave them several attempts to buy their company. Several. And every single time, Blockbuster turned them down. Now, that was, of course, we see now, a big mistake.
That's what I think. And like, I know it's not Netflix directly.
Yeah.
But it's the bad investments. Like, they could, if they would have bought Netflix, they probably would be okay.
Yeah, they would have gotten rid of their competition.
So it's like crazy. It's not indirect. Like, it's not directly related to Netflix, but it's indirectly related to the fact that they didn't buy Netflix.
Yeah.
That they went under.
And we even, everybody saw the fall of Blockbuster. Like, we all saw this coming when Netflix came up. And so it's like infuriating that they weren't like, yeah, let's buy this, you know, let's nip this in the bud. And
yeah, because even later they tried making their own like streaming service, and by that point everyone had Netflix, so like why would you get Blockbuster?
Yeah, so spoiler alert, Blockbuster's downfall started. And it was due to greedy, stubborn assholes who refused to take advice from people and really had this mindset of like, you know, this like boomer mindset of like, I'm not changing anything. Things need to stay the same. And they weren't like changing with the times, basically. And they were like, we have a great idea. Their big revolutionary idea. We will also start sending movies in the mail. Now, at the time, Netflix did not have streaming. They were just mail-in DVDs at this point. And the suits weren't done with their bag of bullshit. They still had like more bad ideas up their sleeves.
Up their streams.
Yeah, I mean up their sleeves. Like
bad. But I mean that's pretty accurate.
Yeah. And here's the cream of the crop of their bad ideas. They decided no more late fees.
I remember that.
So guess what happened? Nobody turned in there. Guess what happened? You'd walk into a Blockbuster on a Saturday night and the shelves would be empty.
Would be gone,
because who the fuck would return a movie if there's no incentive? Like, why would you do that?
Yeah. That was me. Sorry.
Yeah. Blockbuster lost $250 million in sales overnight after their launch of their no late fees. Yeah. That's five times as much as they would have paid to buy Netflix.
Yep.
And I would keep reminding them of that because it makes me so mad. So they tried to remedy this by including the late fees automatically if the movies were not returned after 30 days, which is still a lot of time to keep a movie.
Yep.
They then got sued by 48 states for misleading advertisement. And they successfully won those lawsuits. Like the states successfully won those lawsuits. Yeah. Blockbuster's business was down to just a third of what they had after this. In 2006, Blockbuster crawled back to Netflix with their tail between their legs. And we're like, hey, buddy, remember us? You still want that deal? And of course, Netflix was like, nah, thanks, we're good. Like, we're okay.
There's only one other time that I've heard of a company laughing off someone trying to buy them. Mm-hmm. Was Microsoft, when they were coming, they're trying to make the Xbox. They set up a meeting with Nintendo and try to buy Nintendo. And then everyone at the board at Nintendo looked at each other and were like,
oh, really?
Yeah. And basically laughed.
Yeah.
They left Microsoft out of the boardroom.
Interesting.
Like, literally laughed. Ugh. They laughed in their face. Like, it's a well-known thing that it's not like a saying, like, oh, they laughed at them. No, like, they literally laughed out loud.
Jeez. With
Microsoft, because they were like, American, it was like one of those stories, like the American company trying to come and just buy the competition.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Nintendo was like, we're not doing bad. Like, I don't know what you want to buy us.
Yeah. Like, take the hint, bro.
Yeah.
Someone's offering. They got some shit.
So.
Now, there's a man named Carl Icahn who is well known in the financial world for bringing businesses back from the dead. And in fact, he would actually seek out companies that he thought were run by bad management, which Blockbuster definitely was one of those companies. Basically, he had a lot of money and he would buy stock or enough stock to take over these companies so that he could make the decision or he could be part of the decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once he was in charge, he went around the corporate boardroom and was like, you suck, you suck, you're fired. Like, just literally started firing everybody, because he's like, quit. You're all, yeah, he's like, you guys, you're all idiots.
Yeah, you suck, you suck, you're cool, you suck.
Yeah. He like especially went up to John Antiaco and was like, you should have gone yesterday. I don't know what you're doing here. The taco guy, I don't know what he's doing here. So Icahn then hired a man named Jim Keys, who at the time was working for 7-Eleven, and he was responsible for a 7-Eleven being on every corner. 7-Eleven was also a company that before him wasn't, they were doing okay, but they weren't like as big as they are now.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they brought him over from 7-Eleven, and Jim Keys went on a publicity spree. He went on interviews and he said that Blockbuster would now not only have their stores, they would also have kiosks similar to Redbox, movies by mail, and an on-demand channel. And it worked, because Netflix did not have that much of a selection. And business for Blockbuster doubled overnight with Icahn and Keys in charge.
Nice.
So they were doing really well. But there was something Blockbuster never saw coming. And we definitely didn't. And they couldn't defend themselves against it. In 2008, 158-year-old firm Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy. And the world saw one of the worst financial days in history. Yeah, so a lot of companies got fucked after the housing crash, but especially Blockbuster. So the thing is that Blockbuster and Netflix had equal opportunity to grow at this point. They were both at like a level. In fact, Blockbuster had more than Netflix, because they were not only offering a ton of movies, they were also offering a ton of games. You can rent games at this point, and Netflix wasn't offering that yet. I believe they did.
Oh, true.
They didn't offer it, but they partnered with GameFly. I don't know if you remember.
Yes, that was it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
God, can you imagine what would happen if I didn't have all this useless knowledge?
Exactly.
Why do I know that?
Yeah, exactly. And the other problem was that in the end, basically what screwed over Blockbuster was all the debt they had from borrowing all that money to buy Paramount.
Yeah.
And also for doing, you know, all that other dumb shit basically. And in the after the 2008 financial crash, the debt market was really bad and they just couldn't keep up. So in case you don't already hate Wall Street with a fiery passion, you can add Blockbuster to the reasons why banks ruin everybody's lives. But in 2010, Dish Network purchased Blockbuster for $320 million, which sucks if you think about how Viacom bought it for $8.4 billion. And now it's like dirt cheap. It's like clearance price for Blockbuster. And that's when it started. That's when Blockbuster stores started closing, including their location on Hotel X Road, Chula Vista.
That one lasted a long
time. It did, yeah.
Because, when I graduated high school, people that I knew that had graduated the year before me, a lot of them, like one guy got a manager job at the Blockbuster in Chula Vista. It's Broadway and H. Mm-hmm. And then that guy got other people hired from the same people that I used to hang out with, like in high school. Mm-hmm. And so he hired a bunch of people there, and then he hired a bunch of people at the Palm Avenue by the Vons. Mm-hmm. And so then the guy who eventually became a manager at the one here in Eastlake were all people I knew.
That's so funny.
And so I would hang out at Blockbuster all the time we would just be getting discount on games, or if a new game would come out, they would hold it for us and just stuff like that, like movies, and
yeah,
we'd just hang out to hang out after they got off work or whatever. But Blockbuster is deep in me.
And I was so jealous, because for my first job I applied there crazy. I would literally go every week and be like, are you hiring? And they would never. Oh, I'm talking about the one in, there was several ones around here that I would try to apply to. And then finally I got a job at Starbucks because my friend worked there. And I was like, okay, cool. This is fine. And I got super jealous, because a month later, they opened a position right next to my Starbucks, the one on Sunbow. And they opened a position, and I'm like, God damn it. And my best friend got hired, and I was so jealous. But at least I can, I could go hang out and be there. And it was a clerk situation. I would just give people advice on movies to rent. I didn't even work there. I was just hanging out there.
Not even supposed to be here.
Yeah, the manager gave me an honorary Blockbuster employee. Recognition. She was she's our unofficial employee. And I was yeah, that's right. So after Adrian Brown and Ki-Jeon Sundy bought all the movies left in the store, because that's what we did. We literally cleaned that place out. Blockbuster went away in our hearts and in our mind. That is until 2018, when John Oliver aired a show segment on Russell Crowe's divorce. So what does Russell Crowe's divorce have to do with Blockbuster? Russell Crowe was auctioning off memorabilia for movies he's been in to celebrate his divorce. And so he did this big auction and started auctioning off all the memorabilia. And the John Oliver Show bought that memorabilia and sent it to one of the last Blockbusters in Alaska, hoping that it would save their business. So that's right. There were still 4 stores left in the world. Business in Alaska's Blockbuster exploded overnight. People were coming from all around the world to come see the memorabilia. But sadly, despite their effort, they could not be saved. So the 3 Alaskan stores closed, and they sent their memorabilia to a little town called Bend in Oregon, which was now home to the last Blockbuster on Earth. Now, when Sandy Harding became the manager of Blockbuster in Bend, Oregon in 2004, there were 9,000 stores and over 60,000 employees. And now it's just her and her little Blockbuster family. The Blockbuster in Bend, Oregon started as a video store called Pacific Rental and they were a small chain. They had about 4 stores, and that is when Blockbuster offered to take over and make them a franchise. And ever since then, it's been a Blockbuster. So I'm going to leave our listeners on a little cliffhanger. I'm going to leave you on that note. And if you want to find out what the future holds for that one little Blockbuster, you can now watch a movie called The Last Blockbuster, streaming, ironically, on Netflix. So it's a Netflix movie. And yeah, and you can go watch it. So thanks so much, as always, to Wikipedia and that documentary, The Last Blockbuster. Please watch it. It's like an emotional roller coaster. You'll get nostalgia. They interview a lot of people in it. There's Kevin Smith is in it, Paul Scheer, Brian Posehn. Yeah, a lot of like really great actors and musicians, and just kind of talking about their nostalgia for Blockbuster. And I mean, I was talking about this to Kyle. Like, I am glad that everything's gone digital, because I just hate stuff. But I think Vanessa would say the same thing about books. Like, I'm sure she doesn't really care that they're on digital or not, but it's because she's like an active book reader. Whereas someone like me, like, I haven't read a book in ages. But I do think that if I had a library in my house, I think I would read more often, because it's there. You know, I don't have to go, like, it's like physically there and I can grab it and kind of pick it out. Whereas with, you know, with streaming, we all spend like hours browsing through Netflix, trying to decide what we have. And then we like can't make up our mind, and we're like, oh, there's just too much, you know? So I think there is something about holding it in your hand and looking at the cover and reading the box, and
then going home and being disappointed that the movie sucked.
It was bad. Yeah.
Like, you don't get that anymore.
Yeah.
No, you don't get that anymore. And I mean, it's also, this is also something they talk about in the movie, but like that human connection where you would see someone
Who
was looking at a movie that you like, and you'd be like, oh, you should watch this movie, and you'd get like recommendations, you know, from other people, instead of an endless stream of like internet comments.
Yeah, I mean,
I
think we've talked about that here in our podcast a lot, like the Tower Records, and it's just there's something about not being able to go somewhere and buying that thing you want anymore.
Yeah.
And I think like Best Buy and the Apple Store are probably like the last of their kind before Amazon really like kills them.
Yeah, because you know, there was that people element to it. You would have, like we said in the Tower Records episode, you would have the employee recommendations.
Yeah.
And it would really help, because you were like, well, I like this person, and so I'm going to go based off their recommendations always. You know, like every time I come, I'll pick their stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I miss the smell. Like, someone needs to get on that. I want a Blockbuster scented candle. Like, can someone make that happen?
Yeah.
I heard there's a candle that smells like when you first open a MacBook.
Oh, really?
What?
Yeah. So I'm like, if they could do that,
some of those things are funny to me, because people are always like that, like they like that smell, and like, you know, it's just glue, right?
Yeah, like a new car.
It's just glue.
Yeah, the Blockbuster, it was like, it's like popcorn and burnt plastic.
Yeah,
like laminate, like freshly laminated shit, and it's like
those ones on the back of the
dirty carpets,
the VHS things, and you can like pull out the little sleeve.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the other thing. Like, yeah, it's the same thing. Like, people like that new car smell. Like, when you get a book, like, when you buy a new book, that smell from the book,
yeah,
it's so good. But all of that is, like, glue. We just love glue.
Yeah. We love sniffing glue?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love the new car smell. Glue that's, candle. Like, the best. Yeah.
Yeah, that's all glue. It's glue from the, like, the AC. Like, all the stuff that's holding all this that stuff together is just plastic and glue.
Yeah, delicious. And we love it.
We love it. Yeah.
I called my sister after I watched this documentary, and I've given a lot of shit away, because like I said, I don't like stuff. But out of all the things, I wasn't disappointed until I watched this movie. And I was like, and I called my sister and I was like, I just want to let you know, because at the beginning of the pandemic, I gave away all my DVDs. I had like, I don't know, 400 something DVDs, and I gave them all away to Goodwill.
We just donated all of ours too.
And I, all of a sudden, like my heart broke because I remembered one of those DVDs was in a Blockbuster case. Like they had this thing where you could, they had not when they went bankrupt, but when they were still popular, they had this thing where like you could buy the movie at like a cheaper price than buying it new.
Yeah, I think
so. You just like pay the rest of basically what you've given them.
Yeah.
And I had one, and I was like, oh my god, I gave it away. In that, I told her, I was like, ask me if I'm disappointed about giving away my director's cut collector's tin of Reservoir Dogs. No. No. And I was like, but the Blockbuster book? So disappointed. So I called her and told her that. And she goes, that is so funny that you said that, because I found something in the garage. And I was like, oh, did you find the movie? And she's like, no. And she's like, but I found Kyle's Blockbuster card. So we still have the Blockbuster card. So that's even better, because now I have a small piece of memorabilia.
I think I have my Blockbuster card still somewhere.
I can vividly remember throwing mine away.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're like, I'm never going to need this.
Yeah, when Vanessa and I got married, when we were going to basically move in together after the wedding, like, I threw away a bunch of stuff. So, like, I can remember throwing it away in my bedroom, like, just being like, I'm not going to need this.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, damn it, I should have.
I know, I should have kept that. Ugh. But yeah, man, I would kill for that smell. Again, just like walking in, I'm like, oh, the smell. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because they ask people in the movie to describe it, and they all describe it in the same way. And they were all like, oh, I could smell it right now.
Yeah. It's like when you would walk in. Yeah, when I was little, we wouldn't go to Blockbuster. There was like a mom and pop, like a Chinese, like married like couple. Mm-hmm. And they had a video store down the street of where we lived, and we would always go there. And actually next door there was a Chinese food place, like a mom and pop Chinese food place, kind of like Panda, where they had the trays out and they would just fill in like those like styrofoam plates or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so my mom, because we were like really poor in this place, the video place was really cheap. It was tiny, so I mean the selection wasn't great. We often saw the same movies like over and over again.
Yeah,
but it was like a few bucks for a movie, so my mom would like let us pick a movie like each. And then we would get like three dinner plates, and then we would share like the Chinese food. So that was like a Friday night thing for us, like when I was little.
It's the best.
Yeah, it's so good.
We would when we were kid in like middle school, we would, you know, get a pizza and go pick up movies, like my friend and I, and then go watch them. And I'm like, man, I miss that.
Did I send you that video of the guy who recreated a
a video like rental store?
Yeah, in his basement.
Yes, I'm so jealous. I was that's what I should have done with my DVDs. Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, something like that, if you had the space to do it, would be cool. Because like Noah or like, you know, all our friends' kids, they're not going to know.
No, and you know, another thing that they brought up that was interesting in the documentary is that they're libraries. And so it's like, you can't get rid of all of them, because there's some movies that only exist in a specific format. Mm-hmm. And like, they're not being transferred to digital. And so it's like, and you have to kind of have that as a part of like history.
Or some lost.
At least one every once in a while, you know, every.
Yeah. Or like if a movie is lost, you know, you don't want to, like somebody should convert everything to digital or something. I don't know.
Yeah, although I don't know how they would have. They were talking about, you know, the mistake they made of not buying Netflix, but I don't know how the stores would have worked though, because even if they did buy Netflix, they would have all converted to digital anyways. So I don't know what they would have done with those stores.
True.
Maybe made it like a movie memorabilia type place.
There was
a movie store at the
closed them, but.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think they would have like stayed open. There was a movie place at the mall that sold like movie, like DVDs, but they also sold like movie memorabilia. I forgot what it's called.
M. Goody?
No, no, it was like mostly memorabilia. Like,
oh, like recently? Like,
no, no. This was like back when you would still get DVDs and stuff. But there was like, yeah, they would sell like collector stuff. Like, you know, like one of those pop stores, like the Funko stores, but it was like all movie stuff. I forgot what it was called, but was something like that. The last thing I remember purchasing there was a Death Proof, like, flask thing.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like too long. I might be eating myself. I'm like, oh, no, it's at Plaza Bonita or Westfield Mall, whatever it's called.
Spencer Gifts.
Interesting.
No, yeah, and it was kind of like Spencer, but just all movie stuff. So Grindhouse came out in 2007, so it must have been like 2008.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought like maybe, you know, they probably would have turned into something like that. But yeah, I don't know how it would have survived anyways. Like the stores, I'm sure the company would have done fine, but not the stores.
Did you in your research, did you read anything on Hollywood Video?
No, you know what? I saw it popped up on Wikipedia, but I didn't find like a lot of information about it. I mean, I'm imagining.
It was, I always like, remember them being like the biggest competition to.
Yeah.
To Blockbuster. Yeah. And then, yeah, we would go. Before my friend started working there, we would go to either Hollywood Video or Block, like whichever one was like closest to us at the time.
Yeah. Or had a movie you wanted.
Yeah. But they also ended up closing in like 2010.
Yeah. Oh, okay. They closed faster, I feel. Like they started closing those stores like a lot faster than Blockbuster. Yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember I would go in there. They had that game section.
Mm-hmm.
Was it called like Game Freaks or something like that?
Yeah.
And then so I would go in there when they were closing it to buy all the stuff that they were getting rid of.
Yeah. Anywho, where can they find us?
You can find us on Instagram at Microwave Coffee Podcast or email us at microwavecoffeepodcast@gmail.com.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Yeah, bye. We'll see you next week. Yeah, watch the movie.
Rewind.
Teach us kids about VHS.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Could I get some more coffee?